president's jobs plan by the numbers.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Breakdown, our economy one step at a time, and Marketplace's special look at jobs and getting America back to work. President Obama will head to Richmond, Virginia today to drum up support for the $450 billion jobs bill he laid out last night before a joint session of Congress. 53% of the package is made up of tax breaks for employees and for small businesses that hire.
There should be nothing controversial about this piece of legislation. Everything in here is the kind of proposal that's been supported by both Democrats and Republicans, including many who sit here tonight.
The plan also includes about $60 billion to extend benefits to the unemployed and an equal amount of money on infrastructure spending.
Building a world-class transportation system is part of what made us an economic superpower. And now we're going to sit back and watch China build newer airports and faster railroads at a time when millions of unemployed construction workers could build them right here in America?
So far, the reaction from Republican leaders is about as good as the president could have hoped for. House Speaker John Boehner said the president's ideas merit consideration. So how did we get to the point where our unemployment rate is stubbornly stuck around 9%? Well, the Brookings Institution has a report out today looking at two competing theories. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Suspend disbelief for a minute and pretend that a group of economists is partying hard and arguing. One economist spills his drink as he insists unemployment is high because there aren't enough jobs. Another spits back, there are jobs, but unemployed workers aren't educated enough to get them. Brookings labor analyst Jonathan Rothwell could mediate at a party like this. He wrote the report Brookings released today and says both sides are right. A lot of workers lost their jobs between 2007 and 2009, and companies just aren't hiring them back. But he says for a long time now, businesses also haven't been able to find enough educated workers for the jobs they do have.
I kind of think of it as a chronic illness that has plagued the economy for some time now, but it wasn't really noticed until we had a crisis.
Tim Bartik is a labor economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He says the Brookings report gets it mostly right. He doesn't think education plays such a direct role in today's grim unemployment picture, but he says it is an underlying problem that has to be considered in any proposals to bring the jobless rate down.
There's not one simple policy solution that will solve a multitude of short-term and long-term economic problems.
Maybe with enough drinks, those party animal economists could hash out that kind of comprehensive strategy. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down across the world this morning, and a new Wall Street Journal report won't help if it turns out to be true. The journal says Bank of America officials are talking about laying off 40,000 workers to shore up the bank's finances. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 119 points to close at 11,295.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. By United Methodist Church, offering an opportunity for listeners to join others to reclaim September 11th as a day of hope at RethinkChurch.org. And by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896. AllianzUSA.com.
All this week, we're looking at the economic consequences of 9/11, and today we focus on charitable donations. Charitable giving is one of the five pillars of Islam, but a U.S. government crackdown after the 9/11 attacks led the biggest Muslim American charities to shut down, and donors have been left scrambling, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Before 9/11, most of the charity raised by Muslims in the U.S. went to Muslims abroad, refugees from Afghanistan, school kids in Gaza. Then came the U.S. crackdown on charities, which continues to this day. Jennifer Turner of the ACLU says it's scared many Muslims away from giving zakat. That's the religious obligation to donate 2.5% of your income to charity.
a large number of people also have shifted their giving and no longer give to humanitarian relief organizations or Muslim charities, but instead are giving to the building of mosques locally or to local soup kitchens or shelters.
Some Muslim immigrants still send zakat directly to poor family members, schools, or orphanages back home. But overall, much less money is flowing abroad, and that has an upside for domestic charities, like the Inner City Muslim Action Network on Chicago's South Side, which hosts evening discussions about Islam.
Does anybody know the name of the brother in the hadith? He comes to the Prophet.
Rami Neshashibi founded the group, which has grown in the post-9/11 charitable vacuum. The budget's up from $200,000 to $2 million. They run a free medical clinic, arts, and anti-violence programs.
9/11 led to increase in funding from individual donors who felt like this is really a important part of our work that, quite frankly, we were neglecting.
Another fundraising winner is civil rights groups that fight discrimination against Muslims. Nihad Awad says his group, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, has expanded from 8 offices to 30. With so much money staying in the U.S., he says American Islam is getting a makeover.
Mosques that used to be built with maybe $500,000 now are being built with $5 million.
And Awad says don't be surprised to see lots of cash in the collection box.
In some functions, people do not give credit card information or don't give checks. They just safely they give cash.
That's to keep your charity humble before God and invisible to U.S. government investigators. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, Nike is releasing a limited edition sneaker based on the glowing pair from the 1989 movie Back to the Future Part 2. Now, those shoes laced themselves, the new Nike shoes won't. But the real disappointment for me when I heard about the shoe re-release is that Nike is releasing shoes from the movie and not the hoverboard. I promise you, Nike, if you make a hoverboard, I will buy it, even if I have to buy the shoes too. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Jobs, jobs, and more jobs. It's been dominating the headlines, the airwaves, and the television screens. Last night, the president weighed in.
I am sending this Congress a plan that you should pass right away. It's called the American Jobs Act.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The Breakdown, our coverage of the economy one step at a time, wraps up with this not-so-easy question of, now what do we do? Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.